History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. Do they have to remain untold? No, not as long as we're willing to do something about it. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we find ourselves inspired by these stories from our men and women in uniform. It's Easter weekend, and that's going to be the theme behind our program this week. But before we hear some of the ways young Americans experienced the final Easter week of World War II, I want to draw your attention to something else that took place this past week, a relatively young holiday that seems to take on greater impact and certainly creates greater awareness each and every year. National Vietnam War Veterans Day fell on Good Friday this year because it takes place every year on March 29th. It is so heartwarming to see the contrast in how men and women who served during that era are being treated now compared to the reception they received when they returned from Vietnam. There's a pretty good chance that there are Vietnam veterans in your life, so if you haven't taken the time to send a simple thank you their way this week, now would be a good time for that. And why not put that on your calendar for next year, March 29th, 2025, and make it a point to connect with a Vietnam War Veterans Day event in your area next year. We've heard quite a few Easter Sunday stories from World War II veterans over the years here on Hometown Heroes, and perspective is a powerful thing. If you celebrate Easter and you're gathering with your family this weekend, maybe hearing how a few young Americans spent Easter in combat in 1945 will give you even more gratitude for the blessing of sharing a good meal with loved ones in 2024. The Battle of Okinawa began on Easter Sunday, April 1st, 1945. We've heard from Marines and members of the Army with some powerful experiences on that initial day of what would become a brutal battle. But it was a true nightmare for those aboard ship that first day and the days that followed because of the relentless intensity of kamikaze attacks. We're going to hear just a couple of first-hand accounts of that, starting with the memories of Benny Noonkester, who was a 17-year-old in charge of the Commodore's barge on the attack transport USS Chilton.
I looked up and here come a plane down, straight down, not on an angle, and got a destroyer right near us and killed nearly everybody on there. And it didn't actually sink, but I don't know why it didn't. And that was my experience the first day.
So first day of the battle, you see a kamikaze take out a destroyer, and that kind of says, uh-oh.
Yeah, it did. Then after that was every day. We had 44 separate attacks in one day. One time there was like 400 planes come in one time. All in 53 days, day and night.
So that's pretty much a constant fear that this could happen.
Yeah, it was. That was day and night in that 40 of them, because they come in at night also. And you just lose so much sleep till you got where you didn't even care. I mean, it didn't seem to bother you. During that time, I would see with the Commodore, we had to be prepared to take him where he needs to be taken. So whatever we'd be on standby, not have a permanent station, and we'd be handing ammunition or filling in someplace. And that's what I was doing at that time. Then later when I became a gunner, when I was out at sea, that would be a different story. I could have a permit station. But usually on them situations, in case I could take over for somebody else.
Is it safe to say that those 53 days at Okinawa were the most intense 53 days of your life?
Yes, I would say that. I grew up real fast. I know we hear more about Iwo Jima, it was sad. But Okinawa did have a lot more casualties, I think you'd combine them all together, be 270,000 lives lost, not counting wounded.
And nearly 5,000 from the Navy alone were killed at Okinawa.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was the biggest loss for the Navy in the history of the Navy there. We got hit by a kamikaze, and I thought that was it. This was in the evening of April the 2nd, and I was way down in our compartment, which is the bottom of the ship. And all at once, there's this big explosion. At that time, you went up on starboard and down on port. There's 50 of us down there, maybe. We got out of there okay. And I was wanting to get topside. I don't know where we're sinking or what have you. And one day, I'll just tell you about a good buddy of mine. I went through the gallery, and he had been up on the bridge, and he was all soaked with water and everything, and he had done lost it. He was plumb gone. I mean, he was so scared. He was, and I talked to him a little bit, and I had to get. I hadn't seen daylight yet. I want to get out of where I, you know, I don't know where we're going down or what, and I finally I had to leave him, and he just went over in a corner and got down in the fetal position. He couldn't help himself or nothing. If we went down, he'd have went down. And I went up topside, and now scattered around on the deck was pieces of body and bodies and planes all over the deck. I'm standing there because this day I'm just a standby for. And well, I look over at our sister ship, which is the Henrico, the APA 45. It just got hit, and it was burning dead in the water, and killed lots of sailors. I looked up, and here come these. This days we got hit, but with bombers called Francis. Not fighters, but they were bombers. I looked up, here come a bomber off over our port side, and it was just getting ready to come down on us because it wasn't flying very high. And all at once, that plane was coming, and it made a turn. And I looked up the belly of that plane, and it went out and got our escort. Just blew, you know, it got, instead of us, it got that. And, I mean, I just turned around and looked up to straight ahead, and about 5 degrees off of the starboard side, I seen another plane coming in. And it was maybe 200 feet above the water. I waited there, and I said, well, I waited so long, I said, well, now, this is it. This is, I'm not going to survive this. It's too close. I can't shoot it down. So I just jumped back down the deck, down in the galley, made about one step down jumped. And waited for it to happen. Thought that was it. Now, it didn't blow, and I went topside, and they got it with a 5-inch on. And I found out 55 years later, talked to the guy, put high sights on that thing, and got it. And so we shot that one down. Then, another minute went by, and I looked over on the starboard side, coming straight in was another bomber. And it was I was just trying to guess the distance from us. If I said 300 yards, I mean, it's coming 200 miles an hour maybe. And it's just ready to make it to hit us. And we shot the left wing off. And it stalled in the air. And I looked at that pilot. I don't know where he shoved that window forward or back and jumped out. Just jumped out in the ocean before it crashed. And it hit right at the edge of our ship. And... So anyhow, that was that one day, but there's a lot of other ones.
So I mean, as I hear you describing this, I'm just trying to picture it in my mind, and it almost seems like these Japanese planes, which are not trying to bomb you, they're trying to crash into you and take you out. That they're just swarming around like flies or something.
They did bomb us first. I mean, this one had hit us. I don't know why he dropped 2 500-pound bombs. Just missed us. If he had kept them bombs, we'd have probably went down. And the way I understand what happened there, if you take weight out of a plane, it'd naturally go up, and it hit us high, you know, instead of down maybe where he really wanted to hit us. We'll never know why that happened. But
well, I bet you have your theories on why and how, and it sounds like each one of those you thought could have been it, was probably going to have been it, and none of them were it. Why do you think that is?
Well, I just give God the credit there myself, personally. I really do.
And that has been a familiar refrain from those that survived the Battle of Okinawa and the intensity of kamikaze attacks right from the get-go on Easter Sunday, 1945. For Seth Irving, who had joined the Navy from the Oglala Lakota Reservation in Pine Ridge, South Dakota, the baptism by fire actually began before Easter aboard the destroyer USS Newcomb.
Now, we went to Okinawa about 3-4 days and bombarded, and then the Marines came and Army came and landed. Then we went on picket duty, they call it. All the destroyers were lined up around, kind of half circle around the island, and we were on the northernmost part of that circle. April 6, 1945, approximately 4:35 o'clock, we got a report that over 500 kamikaze planes were leaving Japan.
And you still weren't scared?
No, we got prepared to fight.
Holy moly.
Yeah. And then, you know, we had a lot of aircraft carriers around. They released their and they shot down approximately half of them, or a little over half. Mm-hmm. So there was only about 200 or something got through into the ship area, and that's when we got into it.
So you're on your 40-millimeter mount.
I was on my 40-millimeter mount, but I wasn't firing on anybody because my ship must have been going east. The planes came from the north. Mm-hmm. And so the port side man, he was firing on them, but we were at a standstill because there was nothing coming past.
So you're just sitting there waiting to get something to shoot at.
Sitting there waiting for somebody to tell us there's a plane here or there. But the first kamikaze that broke through, I had a rangefinder. He was on the phone with the control who told him where the planes were, and he would set the range on that gun sight, and he's the one that told me, he said, hit the deck, Seth, there's the plane coming. So I don't know how I did it. I unhooked, and I didn't hit the deck. By that time, it blew me into the water.
You didn't hit the deck because the plane hit your ship before you had a chance to hit the deck.
Yes. All I could see was planes coming. That's all I remember anyway. Mm-hmm. I must have lost it, but I wound up in the water.
So the impact of this kamikaze on your ship blew you right into the water.
Yeah.
It means the ship hit, the plane hit pretty close to where you were.
Yeah, it hit about the middle of the stack. And the stack that I was on threw me and bent over, and I guess that's what happened to me. But that rangefinder didn't make it.
A lot of guys didn't make it.
Yeah. No, I had a 10-man gun crew. I was the only survivor on that gun crew. Of the other gun crew, there was only one survivor off of that one. I was firing at it. And then after I got into the water, the propeller must have missed me by 2-3 feet.
So you're in the water, you're conscious, you're burnt, well, and this propeller is flying right at you? The propeller from the plane, or you're talking about?
Our propeller.
Your
the
ship. You almost got caught in the screws of the destroyer.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I must have been underwater because I could hear it just mumble. And I came up, and that screw, you know, was pushing the water, and it just pushed me out of the way.
Wow.
It pushed me about 100 feet or more away from the ship.
I'm sure you're still pretty stunned and dazed, but how much pain were you in?
I don't remember being in any pain. All I know is that when I was strapped in, I had a steel helmet on, I had a capot jacket on, and all of my clothes were gone. I was bare.
You were naked in the water?
Yeah. I didn't have no shoes. I was burned from my hair was all burned off to about my knee, all on the front side, you know.
So the explosion blew all your clothes off, your helmet off, burnt all your hair off, and burnt you from head to knee.
Yeah.
But you weren't in pain.
I don't feel pain. I don't know why. I just didn't feel pain.
What went through your mind when you realized what kind of condition you were in?
Survival, I guess. That's when survival takes over. I was in that water from about 4:30 until about 10 o'clock at night. Now, that was the scariest part, because you start getting scared, you know.
Well, yeah.
Because of the sharks, etc. I was really scared. And during that period, from about 4:30, 5 o'clock, there was a burnt life raft came floating by, and I jumped onto it. I thought I was going to get saved, but there was nothing on there. It was just burnt. And I was riding it along like that in the ship, and in maybe 2-3 hours, and it was getting dark, and I saw a silhouette of a destroyer sitting there, and I noticed that I was going to miss it by floating, you know.
Yeah, you're floating on this raft, and it's going to take you away from the destroyer.
Yeah, so I abandoned the raft. I figured even though that ship probably couldn't pick me up because they're still under attack, you know.
Yeah, it's not like you can hit the timeout button, come pick me up. They're still fighting each other.
Yeah, and so I was just about ready to get to that ship, and it took off. Of course, on that water, it just pushed me back out of the way, and there I was with nothing, just swimming by myself. I didn't have nothing on me.
So you're naked, you're burnt, you've already been in the water for 3 hours, and now your chance at survival just
vanished,
went away from you.
Yeah.
Did you think you were going to die in that moment?
Yes, I did. I figured I don't think I could make it till morning.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you hear stories about ships and survivors on life rafts for 4 or 5 days, some weeks, some. But I didn't think I was going to make it. Then it was pitch dark, and then I was floating, and it was dark, and all of a sudden I saw a flicker of light, just barely saw it. I started screaming, you know. That light came right up to me, and they picked me up around 10 o'clock at night.
You mentioned when you first found yourself in the water and took stock of the situation that you were concerned about sharks, about, you know, the enemy that was still firing away.
Yeah.
Did you see any sharks during those 6 hours?
Nope.
Good thing.
No. And another strange thing is I didn't see another body.
Nothing.
Nothing. I don't know if that propeller caught me alone and sent me out that way.
Yeah.
But I didn't. I looked and looked and looked because I was wanting to be picked up right away, you know.
I don't blame you.
Yeah, but I didn't see a soul. I was out there for them 6 hours alone.
6 hours?
Yeah.
How long did it feel like?
Lifetime, really. Oh, howdy.
I've talked to some guys who've been in similar situations in the water for a long time. And some guys will describe doing things to keep their mind occupied or thinking through different scenarios. Or some guys would say a prayer. They'd frantically, you know, try to get someone else's attention. What did you do? How did you pass that time?
I don't remember.
I mean, mentally, what was going through your mind? Were you saying a prayer? Were you saying, I'm going to make it? I know I can? I mean, how did you keep going? Where did you find that hope and that persistence to power through?
All I know is I had to survive, you know.
Yeah.
And I did whatever I could. I never saw a shark, and I never saw another human being in there. That burnt wrap was the only thing that I saw, and I should have stuck to it, but I didn't.
Well, what do you think would have happened to you if that raft didn't float by?
I probably would have died. I probably would have let myself die. I was never a good swimmer, but I stayed afloat.
And that 3 hours made a big difference, I'm sure, to have that raft.
Yeah.
Another question that comes to mind. Sorry for all my crazy questions. But you said something when that kamikaze hit. And again, you got the word that something was coming. And just before it hits, you unbuckle. If you did not unstrap yourself from that position, what do you think would have happened?
I would have been drowned. Because I think that, although that guy told me to unbuckle, and I did, and he didn't, because he didn't survive.
He probably didn't have time.
He must have not unbuckled.
Yeah.
And went down with the...
So the whole gun mount went into the water.
Yeah.
So you would have been trapped, if not killed by the impact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or else drowned.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how far down it went. But I know I didn't go very far in because I came up and I just threw some salt water out. But it wasn't that much. So I must have just went in and out, you know.
And just the fact that of your 10-man crew, you were the only one to survive and that the other gun crew had the same ratio. I mean, that in itself says you beat some pretty significant odds to survive.
Boy, hardly we did. Well.
How do you explain it?
I have no answer to that because 84 of my shipmates died that evening amidships. All those torpedo men, they were right in that, and that stack was above a engine room, and it blew. That was engine room number 2. That blew the same time I got it, and all those guys didn't survive. There were some survivors. Of course, the first plane got me.
Yeah.
But there was 4 other planes hit that ship.
5 kamikazes on 1 destroyer.
Yes.
But it didn't sink.
It didn't sink.
Isn't that amazing?
It's amazing.
We could probably fill the rest of your holiday weekend with the amazing stories we've heard about Easter 1945 over the years on Hometown Heroes. But when we come back, it wasn't just Okinawa. Some memories from the European theater are just as gripping. And we'll get a taste of that when this special holiday edition of Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.